We could have some more ado. It would be okay. You guys, I'm so nervous today, and I don't know. Well, thank you. Thank you. All right. So I have the wonderful opportunity to talk to you guys about being self-supporting, non-professional, and non-organized. So, we'll see how that goes. Tradition 7, every OA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. Here's my thought on that. I, as an anorexic, am automatically in the remedial group for self-supporting. Because I didn't even get... I didn't even get the whole concept of must put food in to keep body alive, right? I mean, you can't get more basic in the self-supporting category than that, right? And then also there's that flip end where we want to really support ourselves with the food, right? And that's really what gets us in the door. So self-supporting is such a, Tradition 7 is such a important part of my recovery. I have my little notes here. We'll see if I pay attention to those. Okay, so there are a couple things just to help me along that I went through in the traditions themselves that I want to read, because I felt like I needed to understand how they apply to meetings before I could take you into how it applies to my life. So just briefly, it says Tradition 7 falls naturally from Traditions 5 and 6 if the Overeaters Anonymous Fellowship is to fulfill our primary purpose and remain free of outside influences. We must stay free of the need for outside contributions as well. So it's got to come from us, within us, to keep us sustained, right? Seventh Tradition tells us, tells us that financial support of OA is our responsibility as members of the fellowship. We don't ask for or accept support from outside sources. We're nonprofit, but we still pay our taxes, kids, right? I mean, we are not a charity. And I, as much as I would like to be, I'm not a charity. Like, I struggle so much with that concept of self-supporting. I mean, I joke about the food, but it is really kind of core to what my approach was. When I first came to program, I was homeless. Like, I was in the shelter, and I'd show up to my meeting, and I would say, I have 5 days today, and everybody would be like, that's good, Jen. Did you look for a job? And I'd be like, what is wrong with you people? Like, aren't you all about this recovery thing? Why do you keep asking me about this job? And every week, my home group, I'd show up and I'd be like, I got 2 weeks, I got 3 weeks, I got a month, yay me. And they're like, did you move out of the shelter yet? Did you find a job? Because they knew that if I'm not acting in a self-supporting manner, any recovery that I have is fleeting. It's like sand. It's going to fly right through my fingers. So I have to apply that to my daily life today. I have to look at, am I doing what I need to do to support myself financially, to support myself responsibility-wise? Like, am I doing what I say and saying what I do? Am I living with integrity? It applies in my home life, like pitching in, taking responsibility to do the dishes, make dinner, feed the dogs, whatever it is that's my job to do. And it also applies in my work life. My son has had a lot of health problems recently, and I work for a healthcare system, so guess which healthcare providers we went to, right? Self-supporting applies not only to just what do I have to do for myself, but what do I do for my family, what do I do for my work, you know, wherever I am a part of, I need to contribute to. It's also taught me that I need to ask for help, because that idea of being self-supporting right away, not right away, because I've already told you, it took me a while to kind of get that idea. But as soon as I kind of grasped that idea, I went the other direction completely. It's like, I'm never going to ask for help. I'm going to resolve this myself. I've got it under control. I can figure it out. By God, I am self-supporting. No one is ever again going to ask me, did you get a job yet? Right? So I totally took that and ran. But you know what? That's not self-supporting either. Because I'm not God, I'm finite, right? And I have limitations. And if I cannot acknowledge and recognize those limitations and get the help I need, that's not being self-supporting either, because you guys got to pick up my slack when I fall on my face, right? So I can't be the one-man show. I can't be the one-man band. Here's a good quote out of here. The reasons for being self-supporting are clear. If we accept free gifts from outsiders or too much from one member, we become less than free ourselves. And that was so true for me. You know, it's like when I'm not doing what I need to do to take care of myself, to be self-supporting, it's like I lose my freedom to whatever it is I'm chasing down to try and take care of me. Right? It's like if I need you to take care of me to pay my bills, then oh my gosh, I have to pay attention to you and put all my energies into controlling and manipulating you so that I get what I need, right? And when I'm focusing on all that outside stuff, then I lose my freedom. And isn't that what the core of addiction is about? It's giving ourselves away and losing our freedom. So this tradition really speaks very deeply to me. And I have no idea how time is, so you guys are going to just get what you're going to get. here's another quote out of the book. We learn to depend on God for our security rather than upon other people. Under the guidance of our higher power, we learn to do the things we need to do to take care of ourselves and our group materially and emotionally. We begin to look for our higher power rather than to other people as a source of our happiness and security. And, you know, for me, that was so true, because I mentioned, you know, it's like I was looking for other people always to take care of me. That's how I ended up homeless in the first place. Like, I was never good at the whole get a job. I was good at get a husband. I got a husband, and I picked, like, I should be careful about this, because, be careful. I found somebody who was willing to take care of me but had zero skills to do it. And so I had to spend all my time and my energy trying to get what I needed from a source that couldn't provide it. And the reality is that no matter how awesome that outside source is, no matter how great the job is, no matter how great the person is, nothing outside of me can meet my needs. It's got to come from a power greater than myself and greater than humanity or a single human being. Okay. That's all I have on that. Tradition 8. I'm nervous, you guys. It's going to be choppy. What can I say? Tradition 8. Overeaters Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. Like, how the hell do you translate that into something that I can apply to a meeting or even to myself? Like, holy cow. So what do? We read. OA is built upon a foundation of sharing our experience, strength, and hope. Oh, now that I know, right? One member to another with no strings attached. As OA members, I skip around a little bit, but as OA members, we may donate many hours of service to each other, sponsoring, speaking at meetings, and doing necessary committee and other service work. For this, none of us receives payment in money. Our reward is something money can't buy, our own personal recovery. So I'm going to share from my experience, strength, and hope in OA, and I'm not going to do it to get paid. I'm going to do it because it's the right thing to do, right? I mean, when I get stuck, that's the thing that I ask my higher power. It's like, what's the next right thing to do? You know, I need to contribute. I need to give service, not just at the meeting level, but in my home life, in my work life. You know, at work, they have the green committee. Now, I'm an environmental girl, so this wasn't a big stretch for me, but they have that green committee, and no, you don't get paid for that necessarily, but you show up and you participate. You know, and we have patient care councils where staff aren't necessarily paid, but you show up and you talk about what's going on in our environment and our policies. Is it working for patients? Is it working for staff? You know, I've had to learn that even if I don't get paid, I need to show up and I need to participate, give my service there. And I also have to do that at home. When I come home, it's really easy to just drop my stuff at the door, get the dogs out of the house so they quit barking at me, and I want to go upstairs and close the bedroom door for a little while. Now, it's okay to do that for a little while so I have some sanity, but I have to open that door and come back down and ask my daughter, who will give me a 30-minute answer how her day was and sit and listen and participate in that relationship. You know, I have to show up, give service, share my experience, strength, and hope. I've always been a big solver in life. Like, here's somebody, here I am, I have absolutely very few skills, my life is a shambles, struggling to just do the basics, eat, sleep, shower, work, like put a roof over my head, like 101 stuff. But I'd sit down and I'd talk to somebody and they, you know, I'd listen and they'd tell me their woes and I'd be like, this is what you need to do. Like, I'm a good fixer. Let me give you the solutions. And I was talking with this gal one day and we were both in really bad circumstances actually, and she told me her woes and I listened to her and I was like, here's the perfect plan. And I lay it all out and she looks at me and she's like, but if you have all the answers, how come you don't do them yourself? You know what I mean? I'm always the one who wants to like stand on the outside and I'll fix you, but I'm not going to actually apply it to myself. So one of the big challenges in Tradition 8 and being of service and sharing my experience, strength, and hope is that I have to be willing to participate in the solution and not just dictate it and then walk away and be like, good luck with that one, you know, so I'm safe and cozy on the outside and you just muck around over there, right? We're all in it together. Tradition 8 also says, you know, that we don't advise or try to fix. Sorry, my notes said page 175, so there must be something good on that. In a way, we learn to give our loving support to others freely without trying to advise people or change them, nor do we look to others to work our program for us. In keeping with our non-professional status in a way, we willingly share and listen to our fellow compulsive eaters, but we try to leave behind expectations that they should solve our problems for us, that we should solve theirs, or that others will repay us in some way for helping them. Service is its own reward. Okay, so like I was saying, right, it's like I'm a big fixer and I want to solve. It's got to be enough for me to share and then let that other person do whatever the hell they want with it. And this has been a particular challenge for me in the arena of teenagers. And they're not even teen almost anymore. Like, they're actually, like, young adult now, like 18 and 20. And, you know, Barb was kind of talking about this a little bit before. It's like, oh my gosh, I know what to do and tell you, right? When I was 19, I had a baby already. Yes, that's terrifying now when I look at my 20-year-old, right? You know, and so let me advise you and let me direct you, you know, and it's okay to share my experience, strength, and hope, but I need to walk away and let them do whatever it is that they want to do without expectations, without manipulation, and without controlling. Right? My son is hurt, and you know, the very first thing he does when he gets up out of that bed is he takes off his immobilizer, you know, and it's just driving me crazy because he's going to hurt his arm, and he's going to be permanently damaged, and he's going to have, you know, another trip to the emergency room, and, you know, selfish, but yeah, I don't want to go to the emergency room with a you know, an agonized teenager again, right? You know, and I have to learn to say, I've given you this information, now I'm going to walk away, right? A good friend of mine was showing me the other day, I'm going to pick on you, you know, that she's got a spot where she's been chewing on her lip for decades, you know, because she's not telling them what to do. She's just going to give her service, no strings attached, and then walk away, you know. Okay. Tradition 9. This is going quick. Okay. OA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. Gosh, that just like intuitively seems like that's just crazy, right? Because it's telling me we're not going to be organized. I mean, we're never going to get anything done. The only way I've ever managed to get anything done, to pull myself up out of the gutter, to get a job, is to be organized, have a plan, pursue it, and follow it. But here's the trick with this particular tradition. I need to have a plan, and I need to take actions, but then I need to let the outcomes go to God, right? Quote from the book, what this tradition encourages us to do is remain as free as possible from the bureaucracy that tends to form about organizations taking on a life of its own and obscuring the real purpose of this group. Everything we do in OA is geared to our primary purpose of carrying our message of recovery based on spiritual principles. You guys, I am one who will get lost in the forest because of the trees. right? I will turn my whole attention and focus just to that next action. I'm going to claw my way forward. And even though it's agonizing and I don't feel happy, joyous, or free, by God, I'm going to get myself through those actions, right? And this tradition says, you know what? The route doesn't really matter. Like, the specific path you take doesn't matter so much if the end result isn't there, if you aren't willing to let God in and open yourself up. If I'm managing, manipulating, controlling, I lose sight of my primary purpose. You know, for me, my primary purpose truly is to be happy, joyous, and free, to carry the message of recovery and to be happy, joyous, and free, to have that relationship with myself, my higher power, and other people. That's where I find that. And I lose sight of that if I am busy being the tradition's police, if I'm busy trying to manipulate and control my teenagers, if I'm, you know, whatever it might be. There's a quote, another quote in here, and this one will be harder because I didn't underline it. Meetings which are far from perfect in our eyes can still offer us the miracle of recovery. Our groups make mistakes, but most manage to survive. Yes, our whole room is full of survivors, and I guarantee you every single one of us has made mistakes. I have made so many mistakes in my life, right? I could list them out, but that wouldn't be interesting at all, so I won't. But one time I did an assignment because I was so afraid of mistakes. I was so focused on you do the right thing and you take the actions, and then if you do that, then you get the outcome. And I was getting really, really frustrated because the outcomes weren't what I wanted them to be. And so I was like, well, they must be taking wrong actions. I had to fix my actions, right? And I was given this assignment to make intentional mistakes. That was, like, horrifying and crazy. And I wasn't impressed with that at all. It took me a long time to even become willing to do that. But I finally did become willing, and I had this assignment to do 20 intentional mistakes. But here is the thing. No one could know they were intentional except me, right? So the whole world had to know, had to think that I made a mistake by accident. And it was like, oh my God, that was like horrible to me. And I started out with like these really big extreme mistakes, maybe not so extreme, but basic safety mistakes that weren't really like mistakes, but so much more as like just dumb. Like, it's not a mistake to walk into the road against the red light. Like, that's not a mistake. People will notice, but it's not really a mistake. It's not really good to experiment with, you know. But I did eventually learn that it's okay to make mistakes, that the road does not have to be followed perfectly for me to be okay, that I can trust that whatever the outcome is, it's where God wants me to be. I apply this at home with setting those guidelines because like, okay, we'll pick on the teenagers again. Gosh, I hope they don't listen to this someday, but they probably will. Okay, so setting those guidelines at home, that like, I would get so paralyzed, I said forest for the trees, right? Like, I knew what my expectations were, but not really. And so then when it would come time to call them on something and enforce a guideline, I would just not say anything. And this tradition is also about, it talks about when we see the traditions being violated, we have to speak up. We have to be willing to take an action. Then turn the outcome over. If they're going to get mad or they're going to continue to flaunt the traditions or whatever, it doesn't matter. That's okay. But I have to still be willing to take the action. So what I did at home is I was really struggling with my son again. I didn't know how to do it. I sat down and I made a list, a clear list of what the expectations were. My expectations of him. Now, they weren't for him. He doesn't even know the list exists. I didn't give it to him because I convey my expectations verbally. He knows what the expectations are. But I needed a written list so that I could go back and consult and say, oh, he's violated number 7 on this, so I need to say something. And then let it go. Because I was taking that either all or nothing. I was either over, I say was, like I've stopped. I am either over controlling, or I'm like saying nothing. Right? And both of those violate the spirit of this tradition that I need to take action, to participate and to step up. Okay, I think that's all I have to say. I'm out of time and I'm so really grateful that I got to do this. Thanks.
Now I get to introduce me. I'm me. Hi, I'm sorry, I'm a compulsive reader. Okie dokie, this is making it even... I'm uncharacteristically nervous as well. And so that was interesting, because generally I don't get nervous about speaking. But I think it's because I have experience working the traditions, but I don't have a lot of experience talking about it in this kind of format. But I get 10, 11, and 12. And so I'm going to read Tradition 10. A Readers Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the OA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. Quoting from the OA 12 and 12, we live in a world which thrives on controversy. I am a chaos junkie, okay? It's taken me years to get some recovery out of that, but you know, when it comes push to shove, if I can create some chaos in my life by not eating right, not sleeping enough, not whatever, that's where I go, my default, create some chaos. How can OA sit by and say nothing about so many social evils, which seems to go unchecked in the world? Again, we would immediately alienate some of our membership. So when I thought about Tradition 10, I've been thinking about it off and on for quite a few years. First is, I have no opinions on outside issues. So how does that work? I have an opinion about everything. I have an opinion about everything. And so I thought I could have the opinion and then turn it over to my higher power and not voice it. That was really helpful. That was a really good beginning. For instance, when we're talking about opinions, gossip, rumors, you know, that's kind of basic. I got that in the beginning of the program. When I gossip or participate in rumors, what I'm doing is creating a wedge between me and them to create this. I come from a place where either I'm better than you or I'm worse than you, and mostly I just like to be adored, okay? Generally not worse than you. Sometimes, but not always. I like being adored, so in order to be adored before program, I would put people down. I would surround myself with people that were less than me so that I could look better. And then I came into program and kind of got a little bit, now I'm going to be all over the board on these traditions because they overlap. I learned that anonymity means that we're equal, okay? That some are sicker than others, some people come to program, they're a lot more hurt than others, but that we're all equal. Now, I was always better than you, so this was a novel concept, okay? So having no opinion on outside issues was the beginning for me, was taking my opinion and turning it over to God. But I have progressed in the last few months with that, which was interesting. I'm going to give you a couple of examples. My daughter, my youngest daughter, came over to my house, and she's been saying this for a long time. She says, Mom, I always have to leave this house as quickly as possible because I get very anxious. And I never understood that. I was like, well, yeah, we all know that she's who she is. So I would disregard that statement, completely disregard that statement. And one day I just started thinking about it. What does that mean? First I was offended. I have the perfect home. I am the perfect Latin mother. I have given you everything you've ever needed. I've been in recovery for almost 20 years. What more can you want? But then I started looking at my actions. She's never come into the house that I didn't have an opinion and voiced it. Never. Okay? She's 23 years old now. When she comes over to my house, says, what's Kevin doing? How's he doing? How's the job thing? How's the baby? Blah, blah, blah. And question after question after question after question. If I went into my mother's house, I'd be the hell out of there in about 2 minutes. Okay, because all my mother has to say about my life is loving and adoring. Okay, she might have a comment, she does voice it. But mostly it's a full unconditional acceptance. I've never given her that. Every time she walks into the house, I have an opinion, a comment. Even if I don't voice it. You know, it's the face, the look. And in the last maybe a week, maybe 10 days, I've started changing that. And what I've noticed is she stays longer. So the very thing I've always wanted is the very thing that's happened because I've stopped. Or I'm stopping, God knows. I haven't stopped completely. But it was really interesting. I've always disregarded that statement as, you know, she's a teenager. When she was a teenager, of course she's not going to want to be at home. But she made a really really valid point. As far as, I'm not going to talk too much about this, but here's the big change. Here's the really was like life changing. I was at a meeting. I don't know if this happened to you, ever happens to you, but I have opinions and judgments about people at meetings. Okay? This person has a look on her face, and but that means this, and you know, all this. So anyway, I was at a meeting. Apparently I wasn't in a very good space, because what I found is that I looked at someone who looked at someone else, and I immediately started telling myself a story. And here's how the story went. She doesn't like you anymore, and she thinks you're stupid, and she's communicating that to blah, blah, blah. And so what I realized in that moment was that Tradition 10 gives me the ability to stop the story, to just stop it. It's like, nope, not going to go there. And then so what happened was I looked at somebody else, and I started another story. And then it was hysterical. I was almost laughing out loud at that point. Because in the course of the 10 minutes that I was paying attention, I stopped at least 30 stories. It was like every 3 seconds I was going to start another story about something else. And they're all designed about, you know, I suck, because sometimes it's about my being better than you, but mostly it's just I suck. So that was really revolutionary. That was really an amazing thing, to be able to stop the story. And I have stories about everything, you know, at work, my husband, you know, this, that, and the other thing. And to be able to just, because what wasn't working is having an opinion and trying not to voice it. That was really hard. It's easier to stop the story from even beginning than it is to have the story. Now what do you do with the story? Now you have to let go of the story, and then you have to let God into the story. And it's just, oh my God, just shut up. Stop the story and move on. The problem, of course, with stopping the story is that then you have to concentrate on something else, like what you're doing or how you're doing it or how you're behaving or what, you know, service. Service is a really good way to stop things. If I'm being of service to you, I don't have a lot of time to tell myself all this crap, all these stories. So OA has no opinion on outside issues. And if I try, first of all, if I stop the story short, and then if I do get a story, because I'm not perfect, I still tell myself a whole bunch of stories, then to turn it over to my higher power. It says also in the book to concentrate on the message, and love and support, and avoid controversy. Okay. Very few people know my political affiliation. Okay? Why? Because it's not important to anybody but me. And two, because it's not important to anybody. Okay? How I feel about the world, you know, there are few people know that I don't really care about recycling. Okay? It's too much work. You know, if you want to take my can home, I'll hand it to Barb. She always takes it home with her. Okay? But do I not care about the environment? No, I do. It's just, for me, it's not a priority. But I don't go around, you know, it's not on tape, everybody knows I'm not green, I'm black, I'm very, very black, people. But it's not important. So I don't share things with people that are going to create a wedge between us, okay? If I shared some of my political beliefs or some of my religious beliefs, it could create a wedge between us. And what's the point of that? You know, I've learned with the traditions that unity is so much more important than what I believe or what I think, because we've seen dozens of people leave, you know, and I miss all of them. I have a lot of friends that have left. So I'm going to move on to Tradition 11, and the tradition says, on one of these many pieces of paper, that Overeaters Anonymous, no, that's Tradition 10. Our public relation policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, films, television, and other public media of communication. So what I get out of that is promoting versus attracting. Actions versus words. Okay? I can tell you I'm a really good boss. I ask anybody. I'm a really good boss, right? But if I'm micromanaging you and I'm picking on you, and I'm looking at what you're doing and what you're doing all the time, I'm not being a really good boss. Okay? I'm just saying I'm a good, really good boss. But if I don't pay attention to you, and then I hold you accountable for the things that you are doing or are not doing, then I'm a good boss. If I'm supporting you, and I'm training you, and I'm actually spending time with you, then I'm a good boss. But no amount of my saying I'm a good boss makes me a good boss. I always thought, if I told you I was a good friend, I was a good friend, right? But if I'm not returning your phone calls, I'm not picking up the message, I'm not calling you to see how you're you know, how things are at work, how things are going with you, that doesn't make me a good friend. You know, it's the actions that I take, not the words that I say, that make a difference. I have my brother's permission to tell this story. My brother had open heart surgery in August of last year. He's going to be 50 this year, so he's pretty young. And when I prayed about it, I knew, you know, sometimes you just get that knowing. I knew that I was supposed to go. And I also knew that I was supposed to go while he was having the surgery, because then I could be there, because, you know, the accessibility, hospitals are accessible, that's a good thing. So I went, and I didn't know why I was supposed to go, but I knew that I was supposed to go, okay? And I went in a situation where his home life was a mess. He was new to his own recovery, and the whole family was in turmoil. I mean, that's what I went to. And before I left, I was really clear of my primary purpose. My primary purpose was to support him, to keep him so that he could do some healing and to be of service to my family, my sister-in-law and my nephews. And I went. And I got the BlackBerry. That was the good news. I got to take his BlackBerry away, and I got to communicate. So I had some control, because I need that. But basically what I got to do was share my recovery. I didn't talk a lot about the 12 steps, but I got to live them. I got to sit with my sister-in-law and tell her how recovery had helped me. I got to sit with my nephews and say, you know, your dad's going to be okay, you know. And it was an amazing experience. There was, I mean, my brother and I had healed a lot, but there was a healing that took place that wasn't just me and him. It was a whole family thing. And now, almost everybody is in recovery, which is a great thing. That's not my doing. But I didn't go, well, you should go into this program, and you should go into this program, and your whole family is a mess, and blah, blah, blah. But I did get the BlackBerry, so that was good. And actually, he did give me a BlackBerry as a gift last year, so that was really cool. But it was one of those times where my actions were what made a difference. You know, and that was really, really cool. So I gave you an example of how I broke this tradition with my youngest daughter all the time. And I told you about how I drive a wedge. So I'm going to move on to, let's see. Oh, here's one. I say I'm a good wife, but when my husband wakes up to a dirty kitchen, he doesn't feel really loved. So he hates that. So if I'm going to be a good wife, a good partner, a good spouse, someone who really cares, it's in the actions that I take. I'll give you an example. When I go out the door, okay, for those of you listening to the tape, I'm in a wheelchair, okay? So when I went out the back door, I would put my nails into the door jamb, and I would close the door. There was a groove there because I had closed the door so many times, so often. And one day I came home and there was a handle there. He doesn't have to tell me he's a good husband. He doesn't have to tell me that he loves me. There was a handle there. Still brings tears to my eyes. Because that's what attraction versus promotion is. I don't have to tell you that I love you if I show you. I don't have to tell you that I'm a member of Overeaters Anonymous. If my actions show it, and I start showing some recovery, physical or otherwise, people are going to come, people are going to ask me, you know. So moving on to Tradition 12, pretty good on time. Anonymity is a spiritual foundation of all our traditions. Turkish. Keep this. All right, let's read the tradition. Anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all these traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. Well, that could take a whole day. Okay? I cracked open the AA 12 and 12. It's really interesting to me that I use the AA 12 and 12 for my steps, but I've never actually opened it to the traditions ever until last night at about 10:45. And I cracked it open, I read one sentence, and I closed it because that's all I needed. And all they said was the spiritual substance of anonymity is sacrifice. Wow. What do I know about anonymity? First thing I knew is what you say here stays here. That's pretty basic. But, it encompasses safety. Here we come in place. Or if I'm talking to you on the phone, I know you're not going to, go talk to somebody else about it. I'm free to share from my heart and tell you about things that are really, really that being able to be rigorously honest, that would not happen without anonymity. It just wouldn't. So that was my basic understanding. And then I went to we're all equal, which really screwed with that whole adoration thing. I have heard things, not just at meetings, but in the world, from people that I thought, what the hell do you have to say to me? Right? Never forget, there was a speaker, it was probably third year in program, speaker going to speak at a World Service Convention, looked like he weighed about 350 pounds. And I thought to myself, what the hell do you have to say to me? And when he showed his pants, he had started at 800. He had a lot to say to me. Okay, he had a lot to say to me. So then the whole equal thing. Okay, so I said I had a whole day, but apparently I went completely mind blank. So when you are completely mind blank, you pick up the book and you read something, right? Last paragraph would be good. As we recover in OA, we come to feel that anonymity is one of the most precious possessions. Anonymity is the spiritual foundation of our transformed lives, as well as OA traditions. We are compulsive eaters living in recovery, no longer in bondage to food. We know that support for our recovery will always be here for us, as long as we remember to place principles before personalities. Respecting these 12 traditions which bind us together in the Fellowship of Overeaters Anonymous. Principles before personalities. I used to come to meetings and I was very recovered, okay? I was sponsoring 100 people and I had 100 service positions, but there was always one person I ditched for coffee after the meeting. Always. 4 years. And, irritatingly enough, my sponsee pointed it out all the time. But I just couldn't do it. And then I started to do it, and my life changed. Because if I'm open, I need to be open to everybody. I can't just pick and choose. And then for years, I wasn't a member of CLICS. Not me. And I was, repeatedly, over and over again. But I don't want to admit my actions. I don't want to admit that I have cliques, that I've formed these or been part of this. I don't want to admit that. But it's true time and time again. When given a choice, I want to be with the people I want to be with. I don't want to be with the people who are less than me. And that's gotten me hurt more times than I can count. And it's been really hard to just admit, yep, that's what I do. That's what I do. I'm doing the cabin assignments for the retreat. And, that's always a great position because you can put yourself in any cabin you want. Right? Except two things are happening. I don't know what cabin to be with. It's like, now what do I do? I don't know who to be with. And nobody's requested to be in my cabin. First time ever. So I'm getting these registrations, right? So this is God's way of screwing with me. Okay? I know. God's way of screwing with me. because I get to see all the registration forms. So I get to see who's picking who. And then I want to talk. Then I go back to tradition 10. I want to tell myself a story right now about this, that, and the other thing. And it's like, no, we don't do that. We're practicing tradition 10. But it's principles before personalities. And then there's always, you know, I don't want to be in it. There's very few times that I would like to not be in the cabin with. But that hasn't happened this year, which is really, really great. And it's good to see that recovery. So this year I have no idea what cabin I'm going to be in, and hopefully I'll just put myself in an available spot, because that will show more recovery than anything I've done. My trying to control where I'm going to be, who I'm going to be with, you know. And then in closing, I would like to end with a little bit about Tradition 10. One of the reasons that I've been able to stop with the opinions on outside issues is because God's a bigger nag than I am. You know, I had a tape in my head. SK to sponsor you, SK to sponsor you. It was in my head for 4 years before I asked her to sponsor me. 4 years. So I don't have to worry about my kids, because God's in there going, hello. And then somebody asked me, what's an outside issue? It's about anything that I can't touch is an outside issue. So with that, thank you very much for coming, and we're done. We are not done. We're done speaking.